But the first thing Anya did upon rising the next morning was put in a call to Doug Morrell. Given all the strange and unusual things Humphrey had searched for over the years, she knew Doug would not only know who he was, but probably had a file cabinet full of information on him.
Yes.
Forget the Batman, Doug. I've got something even better. What if I told you that not only did I know exactly what Robert Humphrey had been searching for when he disappeared into the jungle 3 years ago, but that I also know where he went and exactly how to get there? Doug? Did you hear me, Doug?
I heard you just fine, but I refuse to fall for something that's so obviously a prank. When you're ready to be a grown-up and put this behind us, let me know. Until then, I've got work to do.
He hung up on me! How dare you hang up on me! I'm serious, Doug. I know exactly what Humphrey was looking for, and I've got the evidence to prove it. All we have to do—
I've already apologized for the drone, Anya. I'm not going to do it again. If you can't accept my apology, fine. But stop trying to tease me with stories of Humphrey's lost expedition and the vanished tribe. It's just not going to work.
Anya gritted her teeth. She went to hit redial again, but stopped, her thumb poised over the button.
Ah, nuts.
After throwing on some clothes, Anya went down to the main first-floor hallway and hustled down its length until she reached Lenny's door. It took a minute, but eventually he opened the door a crack and blinked out at her.
Anya? What are you...
Anya just pushed past Lenny and into his room.
I've got this terrific idea for the show, but I can't get Doug to listen to me. He thinks I'm getting back at him for what he did the other day.
Anya turned to face Lenny.
Oh.
Lenny was standing just inside the door, wearing only a tight pair of boxer briefs that left very little to the imagination. He had a hard, muscular body.
Sorry. Didn't realize you were,
Come on in, Anya. By all means, no need to wait for an invitation.
Anya turned around.
Shouldn't have barged in. You're right. Can you put some clothes on? I need your help with something important that I can't do alone.
You sure you want me to get dressed?
Remember what I did to that drone, Lenny?
Yeah, fine. Give me a minute here. All right. Open your eyes and tell me what this is all about.
Anya turned back. Lenny had pulled on a pair of cargo shorts and a loose cotton shirt. She filled him in on what had happened, explaining about the robbery and how she'd ultimately discovered that there was a second set of images hidden behind the first.
So you think it's authentic?
Yes! I can't imagine anyone going through that much trouble for a fake, can you?
No, I have to admit.
Porter knew the map was there. It's the only explanation that makes sense. Why else would he want the drawing so badly?
So what's the problem?
I called Doug to convince him to finance an expedition to follow in Humphrey's footsteps, using the clues as our guide, but he hung up on me before I even had a chance to explain what I had.
Hung up on you? That doesn't sound like Doug.
I'm afraid that's my fault. I was ticked off when I spoke to him earlier this morning, and now he thinks I'm just trying to get even with him.
Now I see. You want me to tell him you're not making this up.
Exactly. He'll listen to you.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. He's not very happy with me right now, either. I did let the drone get destroyed, after all.
Trust me. The minute he realizes we're serious about showing the world exactly what happened on Humphrey's last expedition, he won't give the drone a second thought.
Okay, it's worth a try.
Lenny pulled out his cell phone and speed dialed Doug.
Hello? Doug?
Yes, I know. I said I was sorry. Doug,
the two of them spent several minutes talking before Lenny handed the phone to Anya.
Yes, Doug?
If this is a joke, I swear to you, I'll...
It's no joke. Everything from the way the sketch was hidden to the notations on its face indicate it was created and intentionally left behind by Humphrey prior to his departure. He must have known that he might not make it back and he left behind some insurance, just in case.
All right, fine. I'll take your word for it. Now what?
We go after him. With the show's backing, Lenny and I could buy the gear we need right here in Maun and be on the road before nightfall.
Nightfall, huh? And what does Lenny think of the idea?
He's behind it 100%. It's the opportunity of a lifetime and he knows it.
You've got a week. Can you do it in that amount of time?
1 week. With the map at our disposal, that should be plenty of time.
The fact that they had already been buying supplies and equipment from the locals for the past couple of weeks during their ill-fated search for the Batmen would make preparations for this new search easier. Anya would restock their gear and food supplies, while Lenny saw about extending their Nissan SUV rental for another week. When he was finished, he would bring the vehicle around to the outfitters to be loaded. If all went well, they should be on their way before lunch. The owner of the General Supply was a jovial fellow named Michael Isuda. He welcomed Anya back to the store and then worked with her for the next 45 minutes to gather the materials they were going to need. As she waited for Isuda's staff to package up everything she'd ordered, Anya reviewed one of his maps of the Kalahari, paying particular attention to the northern stretches of the Central Kalahari Game Reserve. When she'd been up until almost dawn the night before, working on deciphering the clue Humphrey had left behind, she became confident she had figured out the first couple of lines. The use of the word walls in the second line indicated that they were looking for a building of some kind, and the reference to it being amid the wild beasts suggested that it was within the confines of the game reserve. Anya had been confused by the reference to the tulip until she figured out that it was code for something of Dutch descent, the tulip being the national flower of the Netherlands. So the end result was that she was looking for a building associated with the Dutch in some way that stood within the boundaries of the game reserve. Before she'd called it quits to grab some sleep, she'd also turned to the online community of myth hunters by way of the alt.archaeology.esoterica news group for help. She'd logged in under her usual pseudonym and had posted a request for any information connecting the Dutch to the legend of the lost city of the Kalahari. Logging off, she'd then tried to get some sleep. When she awoke a couple hours later, mid-morning, she'd found several replies, one of which had caught her attention. The post was by someone using the handle Sir Drake. Farini and his son supposedly spent 2 days recuperating at a mission founded by an old Dutch priest on their return from the lost city. It was the connection Anya was looking for. She sent Sir Drake a follow-up, asking if he knew the name of the mission or where it was supposed to be. His reply stated that he didn't know the name, but it was supposed to be located in what is now the northern part of the wildlife sanctuary in Botswana. Anya was looking for a Dutch mission in central Botswana. But try as she might, so far she hadn't been able to locate any. Having exhausted her usual sources, she was now left with staring at the storekeeper's map and trying to imagine the logic of where to build a mission. She was so engrossed that she didn't hear Isuda approach.
Looking for something in particular, Anya?
As a matter of fact, I am.
Anya then went on to explain about the mission.
Oh, you need Dr. Crane.
Who is he?
Dr. Crane is a good man. If you are sick, you can go to him and he will help you, even if you cannot pay.
Isuda pointed to a spot on the map that was about 100 kilometers south of Maun, within the northern reaches of the Central Kalahari Game Reserve.
Dr. Crane's compound is here. His family built a medical clinic on the ruins of a much older facility. They've been helping the local people for generations. So much so that when his reserve was created, Dr. Crane was given permission to keep running his clinic inside the park. I would think that is the place you seek.
Does he have a phone?
I'm afraid not. If you want to speak with him, you will either have to wait until he comes to town or go out to his compound.
How do you know when he's coming to town?
I don't.
So I guess I'll have to go to Dr. Crane. Thanks for your help.
My pleasure.
Hi, Lenny. What's up?
Bad news, Anya. Our truck has not just one, but two flats.
Can't you change them?
I could if I had more than one spare. I've notified the rental company, and they say it's going to take at least an hour to bring the extra tire over.
So rent something else.
Tried that, too. Apparently, they're out of four-wheel drive vehicles at the moment. I, for one, don't want to be driving around the Okavango Delta in a Ford Escort.
They had no choice but to wait. It was nearly 1 o'clock p.m. by the time Lenny finally showed up with the truck. It had taken almost 2 hours for the tires to be delivered and another 45 minutes to swap them. Since Lenny's camera equipment filled about half of the rear cargo area of the Nissan, some of the supplies had to be tied to the cargo rack on the roof. Finally finished, they had started out on the road with Anya behind the wheel. They left Maun going south on the A3 toward Lake Ngami. The road was paved for the first 20 miles, but after that it abruptly turned to dirt. The tires threw up a cloud of red dust that billowed behind them like the long tail of a comet. The road had them bouncing about in their seats with every dip and rut, but Anya didn't mind. She was back in the wild, chasing down another legendary locale and loving every minute of it. 2 hours after leaving Maun, they turned south on a smaller dirt road that, if Lenny was reading the map correctly, should bring them to one of the few gates into the chain-link fence protecting the park. At 33,000 square miles, the Central Kalahari Game Reserve was the second largest reserve in the world, covering an area roughly twice the size of Massachusetts. It had been established in 1961, and thanks to the tireless efforts of the Botswanan government and wildlife preservation groups the world over, had become a popular destination spot for safari tourism over the past two decades. Like the majority of the Kalahari region, the land was mostly flat, though they occasionally encountered long, undulating hills. The desert dunes were covered with bush and grasses, dotted here and there with short stretches of trees. When they reached the entrance, Lenny hopped out and opened the gate, then waited for Anya to drive through before closing it again behind them. It wasn't long before living proof that they'd entered the park walked right in front of them. A massive herd of wildebeest decided that they wanted to graze on the other side of the road, which forced Anya to pull over and wait while several hundred of them passed. She sat watching with delight at the sight of so many wild animals together in one place. Lenny took more than a few shots with his cameras. By the time the herd had thinned out enough to let their vehicle pass, Anya was almost sorry to go. They drove on for another 15 minutes.
Look! Over there!
Anya followed the line of Lenny's finger to where it pointed to a large flock of carrion birds wheeling in the sky, about 100 yards to the left of the road.
Has to be something big to draw a crowd like that.
Without thinking, Anya turned the wheel in that direction. The truck bounced as they left the dirt road behind and made their way across the open plain. Anya kept her gaze locked on the knee-high grass she was driving through, not wanting to discover a boulder or fallen tree the hard way.
What are you doing?
What does it look like I'm doing? I'm gonna take a look. Isn't that why you pointed it out?
They got within 20 feet before the carrion birds took to the air en masse, not happy at having their meal interrupted. Their departure revealed the large gray mound they had been feeding on, a dead elephant. Anya brought the truck to a stop and turned off the engine. She and Lenny got out and stopped a few feet away from the carcass. Lenny stayed standing, while Anya squatted down to take a closer look. Anya knew elephants lost their teeth 6 times during their lives, and that the most common cause of death for an older elephant was starvation due to the loss of those teeth. It was immediately clear that this particular elephant hadn't died from natural causes, however. The missing tusks and bullet holes in its sides were testimony to that.
Poachers. So where are the other elephants?
Elephants gathered in family units, led by a matriarch, and it was rare to see one of them alone. Even adult males tended to gather together and form alliances with other males. This particular elephant hadn't been dead for long. Aside from the coppery scent in the air from the tacky pool of blood that had formed around the body, there wasn't the stench one would associate with a carcass that had been lying in the sun for any length of time, which meant the poachers couldn't be far away. Lenny must have come to the same realization as Anya did, turning in a slow circle, looking around them with the kind of intensity that suggested he thought they might not be alone. Anya stood and did the same at the sensation of being watched. The plane stretched uninterrupted back to the road they'd left behind, and she hadn't seen anything on their way in to indicate someone had been here before them. The grass to either side seemed undisturbed, though she'd be the first to admit that didn't mean much. If the poachers had been on foot, they could have moved through the area without leaving any obvious sign at all. She took a few steps to the left, which gave her a better view of the area on the other side of the carcass. The sun at her back brought the twin sets of tire tracks into sharp relief. They began about a dozen feet from the carcass and ran in a straight line toward a large copse of trees a few hundred yards away. Anya was staring at the trees, wondering if the poachers were watching them even now, when she saw a flash of light. It was only visible for a second, but that was all the time she needed to recognize it for what it was. Sunlight reflecting off glass.
Get down!
Anya dove at Lenny and they slammed to the ground.
What the hell was that?
Keep your head down. Do you want to get it blown off?
Hell no, but how are we supposed to see if they're coming when we got our heads down in the dirt?
Lenny had a point. They had to get out of here as quickly as possible. Anya glanced behind them, gauging the distance to the truck. 12 to 15 feet at most. Thankfully, she hadn't parked straight on, but at a 45-degree angle relative to the elephant. If she could reach the truck and get to the other side, she'd be shielded by several tons of Detroit steel. She needed a diversion.
Take off your shirt.
What?
You heard me. Take off your shirt.
He still didn't move. Anya rolled over on her back and began unbuttoning her own shirt. She stripped down to her tank top and flipped back over on her stomach, the shirt bunched in her right hand. She kept her left hand flat against the ground and used her body as a shield to keep Lenny from seeing what she was doing. She then passed him her shirt.
We can't stay here forever, so you're going to create a diversion while I make a run for the truck.
I'm going to create a diversion with this.
And this.
Lenny's eyes nearly bulged from their sockets as she passed the English broadsword across the grass to him.
Anya, it's a freaking sword!
Yes, it is. Now here's what I want you to do.
Anya quickly explained what she intended.
You're out of your mind!
Okay!
He wrapped the shirt around the tip of the sword and got ready to do his part.
On the count of three. 1, 2, 3!
Lenny used the sword to lift her shirt over the far edge of the elephant carcass. Anya leaped to her feet and rushed for the truck. She reached the truck and went sliding over the hood just as bullets hammered into the side of the truck in her wake.
Damn, that was close.
She scrambled on hands and knees over to the driver's door and yanked it open. She pulled herself across the two front seats on her back, being sure to keep her head below the dashboard. Anya focused on digging the keys out of her pocket and jamming them into the ignition. Anya sat up, dropped the truck into drive, and jammed her foot on the gas all in one long, fluid motion. As the Nissan lunged forward, she cut the wheel hard to the right, sending the vehicle slewing sideways until she brought it to a stop right next to the dead elephant.
Now!
Lenny yanked open the rear door and threw the sword into the truck. He leaped in as Anya rammed her foot on the gas. She hoped he wouldn't notice that the sword had disappeared. The window next to her shattered, and suddenly she was aware of just how much gunfire was coming their way. Anya spun the wheel and raced across the uneven surface of the plain. The gunfire followed them for a moment, a final stray bullet smashing in the rear window, and then they were swerving back onto the dirt road and racing south as fast as the truck would take them.
You okay back there? Lenny?
Anya glanced behind her. Lenny was sitting in a pool of blood, his hands clamped tightly against the gunshot wound in his left thigh.
Not as light on my feet as I used to be.
A glance in the rearview mirror told her they weren't being followed, for now, so Anya pulled to the side of the road. Immediately, she was out of her seat and climbing into the back. She'd seen enough bullet wounds to know that the bullet had entered the back of Lenny's leg and exited out the front about halfway up his thigh. There was a lot of blood, but it was seeping out of the wound rather than spurting in a stream. The artery hadn't been cut.
That's good. He might just live long enough for me to get him help. First thing I have to do is stop the bleeding.
Anya dug in the back of the truck until she located the medical kit. She pulled several thick pressure bandages out and put them over the entrance and exit wounds. She used an ace bandage to hold them in place, and then pulled the whole thing tight with the help of the leather belt Lenny was wearing. It wasn't the best field dressing, but it would do for the time being. Anya hauled Lenny fully upright in the seat, and then used the seat belt to secure him in place. After that, she hauled herself back in front behind the wheel. In the rearview mirror, she could see they still had the road to themselves.
Hang on!
Anya threw the truck in gear and slammed the accelerator. The SUV surged ahead. She snatched the map off the dash and looked it over while trying to keep one eye on the road. Lenny's wound was a bad one. If she didn't get him help soon, he might bleed out. Tourniquet or no tourniquet. They were too far from Maun. She was going to have to find something closer if she wanted to do Lenny any good. The only place for miles around was the clinic they'd been headed toward.
Dr. Crane's it is, then.
A little wooden sign staked into the dirt at the edge of the road was her only indication that she'd reached the turn. She only hoped she wasn't already too late. Less than 5 minutes later, she emerged from the trees and spotted a cluster of buildings behind a chain-link fence a few hundred yards ahead of her. She could see people on the other side of the gate. They had the gate open and standing wide by the time she reached it. She pulled up next to the main building and slewed to a stop. Anya got out of the car and threw open Lenny's door.
I've got an injured man here!
With the help of several men, Anya was able to wrestle Lenny out of the Nissan and carry him inside the house. A tall man with round glasses and a head of curly brown hair met them in the foyer and took one look.
This way, quickly!
He led them into the room beyond, which turned out to be the kitchen.
Get him up on the table.
Anya and her helpers swept the table clear and hefted Lenny's unconscious form onto it. The newcomer, who turned out to be Henry Crane, the doctor in charge of the clinic, took one look at Lenny's injury.
Quick, go get supplies in my surgical bag.
His people scurried out of the kitchen for the requested items as Henry moved over to the sink and washed his hands.
What happened?
We ran into poachers and they started shooting.
Those bastards are getting more dangerous every day.
Henry dried his hands on a clean towel and returned to the table, where he began to examine Lenny's wound in earnest.
You're both lucky to be alive.
What's the verdict?
I won't know for sure until I get in there, but appearances suggest that the bullet struck the femur and started tumbling, which is why you have a much bigger exit than entry wound. No matter what, we have to get in there and stop the bleeding.
Henry was already going to work on Lenny, cutting away his jeans and washing the wound with water so he could see what he was doing.
Do you have any experience with this kind of surgery?
Aside from a surgical rotation during my residency at Mount Sinai in New York a decade ago, I haven't had much experience with gunshot wounds.
Guess I'd better stop pestering you and let you get to work then, huh?
If by that you mean getting over here and helping me with this, then by all means, step two.
2 hours later, Henry stepped out onto the back porch and sat on the step next to Anya. He handed her a glass of iced tea, then took a long swallow from his own glass.
The surgery went well. I was able to tie off the blood vessels to keep him from losing any more blood. Thank you for your help in there. He's resting quietly for now, but he's going to need constant care over the next few days, and I don't have the facility here for that.
When can he travel?
Hard to say. These rough roads will bounce him all over the place in that vehicle of yours. That could tear open his wound and undo all the work I just did. On the other hand, I'll run out of antibiotics he needs to prevent infection in about 48 hours. It's six of one, half dozen of the other.
If I could arrange for a helicopter to pick him up, could you see to it that he gets aboard?
And where will you be?
Our producer has only given us a week to get this story together, and I'm already behind as it is. If I can't pull it together in time, we both lose our jobs.
Television?
That's right.
Anya took a minute to give Henry a rough idea of what the show was about.
We were actually on our way to see you when we ran into the poachers.
Coming to see me? Why?
3 years ago, the explorer Robert Humphreys set off to find what he called the lost city of the Kalahari and was never seen again. We've recently come across information that might help us discover what happened to him and are doing what we can to retrace his final route.
Anya didn't miss that the doctor had stiffened when she mentioned Humphrey's name.
He knows something.
Henry glanced down at his drink, then smiled at her disarmingly.
I'd be happy to help, Miss Creed, but I honestly don't know what I can do for you.
Anya knew better. His reaction had confirmed what she'd been able to figure out on her own. It was time to put her cards on the table and see how he responded. She unbuttoned the pocket of the fresh shirt she'd dug out of her pack and pulled out the copy she'd made of Humphrey's original drawing with its cryptic clue. Unfolding it, she laid it on the step between them.
The tulip stands amid the wild beasts. Within its walls, the first of the answers you seek. Find the gray crown that watches over the flock to receive a piece of the puzzle you hope to unlock.
Henry made no move to pick up the paper. He didn't even glance at it.
Once you realize you're looking for a building, it doesn't take more than a few minutes on the internet to learn that this compound was originally built by a Dutch missionary back in 1865. Given that the building we're now in stands in the middle of the world's second largest game reserve, I don't think I'm mistaken that this is the tulip referred to in the verse. That was all I'd managed to figure out when I left Maun this morning. When you introduced yourself, the rest of the puzzle fell into place. Given the number of gray-crowned cranes we've seen since entering the reserve, I'm disappointed I didn't figure it out sooner.
Nothing to be disappointed about. I certainly wouldn't have figured it out.
Did Robert leave this puzzle piece with you?
I don't know about a puzzle piece, but he did leave me a letter. Asked me to give it to the one who came asking about that riddle. Come, and I'll get it for you.
He led her back into the house and down the hall to the last room on the left. Bookshelves lined one wall, a collection of photographs another. A pair of armchairs with a lamp between them turned one corner of the room into a reading nook. A solid wooden desk, its top lost in papers and files, occupied much of the rest of the space. Henry went directly to it and began hunting for Humphrey's letter. Anya stepped over to the photographs. There were a few wildlife shots, elephants, zebras, that kind of thing, but most of the photographs showed Henry involved in one project or another. A photograph of him helping a pair of what looked like San tribesmen deliver a baby goat hung next to a shot of Henry talking with the mayor of Maun, according to a caption under the image. A picture of him digging a well was paired with an oversized shot of him playing in a group of giggling schoolchildren. It was a collision of the old and the new, ancient and modern, and to Anya it seemed to sum up life in southern Africa pretty well. One photo of Henry and a heavyset man with curly hair and an infectious grin particularly caught her eye. The two men stood with their arms around each other's shoulders, smiling at the camera like high school chums, the plains of the Kalahari stretching away behind them. The other man in the photo with Henry was Robert Humphrey.
Ah, here it is.
Anya turned to find Henry holding an envelope out to her. It was creased and faded, but other than that, not too worse for wear. Anya stepped forward eagerly and took the envelope from Henry. She turned it over in her hands, studying it. There was no writing on the outside. It wasn't thick. It probably held a single piece of paper, two at the most. Anya looked up to find Henry watching her curiously.
Aren't you going to open it?
In a moment. What did he say to you when he gave you this?
Nothing much, really. Give this to the one who comes asking about the tulips and the crane, or something like that.
That's it? Nothing about what it was for, or why he wanted you to hold on to it?
That's it. Robert wasn't one for long explanations.
I'll say.
Anya turned the envelope over in her hands. It was just an ordinary envelope, like millions before it, the kind you could buy in any stationery store. Henry indicated a nearby armchair.
Please, sit down and I'll try to explain.
Once they both found a seat, Henry went on.
Robert and I have known each other for years. High school friends and all that. He visited a time or two a while back, but was never enamored with Africa the way I was, so he never stayed for long. Then, all that business about Bigfoot or whatever the hell he was chasing came out in the press and he wanted to get out of the limelight for a while, somewhere remote enough that the paparazzi couldn't be bothered to hunt him down. Can't get much more remote than this place, except maybe on an iceberg in the Weddell Sea.
So you saw him a lot before that last expedition?
Oh, no. If there's one fact I've learned about Robert in all the years I've known him, it's that he can't sit still for more than 10 minutes at a time. He wasn't in Botswana a week before he was off again on one of his quests.
And this? When did he give you this note?
He stopped here on his way out into the bush that last time. We shared a meal and he left the next morning. He was always asking me to watch over something or other, so I didn't give it any thought at the time. Now, I wish I had. Over wine that night, he gave me the envelope along with those crazy instructions of his. Tulips and crane? I had no idea what he was talking about until you read that verse to me earlier. To be honest, I'd forgotten I'd even had it until that moment.
Time we find out what it's about then, don't you think?
Henry nodded. Anya carefully broke the seal on the envelope and looked inside. Just as she'd suspected, there was a single folded piece of paper. She took it out and unfolded it.
If you're reading this, it no doubt means that things haven't gone as well as I'd hoped they would on my search for the vanished tribe and their lost city. That's too bad. It would have been nice to return home a victor one last time. I have little doubt that I have, in fact, unearthed the location of that ancient city and, like Mallory before me, perished on my return trip before I could prove my success to the world. While unfortunate, I'm apparently not in a position to complain about it at this point. That's where you come in, my dear reader. I've left clues to the location of the lost city. If you're reading this, you've found the first of them. At the end of this letter, you'll find the second. I hope you're like me, intrigued by the mysteries of the past and driven to solve them, and that you'll take up the search on my behalf. Tell that old windbag Crane I'll miss him. He's a far better man than most. Good luck and Godspeed, R. Humphrey. In the place where Tantor goes to die, Ahab's bane trumpets his call. They say that music soothes the savage heart and makes allies of us all. Windbag?
He used to tell me I talked too much. So, what are you going to do now?
Try to solve the puzzle, I guess.
And the clue? Do you know what it means?
Not all of it, no, but I've got a good start on it.
Really?
Well, in the first clue, your friend Robert used plants and animals to represent the key components of the clue, namely the tulip and the gray-crowned crane. In the second clue, he's making literary references.
I understand the Ahab reference, but Tantor? Is that an author's name?
Nope. It's the name of an elephant, actually, from Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan novels.
Robert must have been drunk when he wrote that one, Miss Creed. What on earth do Moby Dick and an elephant named Tantor have to do with a lost city in the middle of the Kalahari?
Believe it or not, your friend Robert is actually being very clear. To find the next clue, I have to track down a white elephant in the middle of an elephant graveyard and play it some music.
Of course! That makes perfect sense. How silly of me.
Sounds kind of fun, actually.
There's no such thing as an elephant graveyard. Never mind a white elephant. Robert must be pulling your leg.
I don't think so. It doesn't have the feel of a practical joke. He went to a lot of trouble to put these clues together, and I can't see anyone doing that unless they were serious about the end result. What if he wasn't being literal? According to legend, the elephant graveyard is a place where old elephants go to die, right? Can you think of anywhere that elephants gather in a group? Somewhere that might also be related to the word white?
This is the Kalahari, and in the Kalahari, all creatures, great and small, including elephants, gather at the watering hole.
And that's pretty obvious.
You're the expert. Besides, you'd have a hell of a time figuring out which watering hole, anyway. Too bad we can't just ask the sun. Huh.
What is it?
The sun. That's got to be it.
Henry hustled over to his desk and dug in one of the drawers until he found a topographical map. He glanced at the piles on top of his desk and then opted for the floor in front of it instead, spreading out the map so Anya could see it as well. He pointed to an area south of their present position and just north of a low range of mountains.
The government forced most of the San tribesmen to relocate out of the reserve, allegedly for their own protection. A small group of them refused to leave and retreated to a valley at the base of these mountains. It doesn't have an official name, but the locals call it the White Valley due to the presence of a particular flower that grows there in abundance.
A flower with white petals, no doubt.
Precisely. But it's even better than that. This particular group of the San call themselves the People of the Elephant.
Satisfied that she and Henry had deciphered the clue properly, Anya set about making arrangements to have Lenny transported to the hospital. Using the mission's satellite phone, Anya put in a call to Doug in New York and explained the situation.
Can you send a helicopter to pick up Lenny?
Jeez, Anya, do you have any idea of the cost of aviation fuel?
Doug, Lenny's life is at stake.
Oh, okay. The helicopter it is. The fastest we can get one there will be about mid-afternoon tomorrow. I guess you should return as well.
No can do. Did you forget we still need the footage to replace the failed Batman piece? Also, we have very little time to get what we need. I'm not going to wait for the helicopter to get here. I intend to be back on Humphrey's trail first thing in the morning.
Anya gave Doug the number to Dr. Crane's satellite phone to pass on to the helicopter pilot in case they ran into any difficulty finding the place. With the details settled, she hung up and went in to see Lenny. He was awake when she stepped into his room and even managed a smile. Lenny's skin had an odd gray pallor to it, no doubt a result of the blood he'd lost, but he was sitting propped up by a couple of pillows behind his back.
How are you doing?
All right. Guess I jigged when I should have jagged.
You're just not used to having people shoot at you. But I'll give you points for trying.
Thanks. You're a doll.
Anytime, man, anytime.
So now what?
Now you get to take a little helicopter ride back to Maun and spend about a week in the hospital waiting for that leg to heal.
And you?
The show must go on.
You can't be serious. Somebody was shooting at us. What if they're out there lying in wait even now? The minute you leave the compound, they'll be all over you again. Except this time you'll be alone.
Whoa, easy there, big guy. We don't want you pulling out any of those stitches.
Be serious, Anya.
I am being serious. Tear out those stitches and Dr. Crane will have my head on a pike. Now why on earth would poachers, who we never even saw, wait around to finish off the non-witnesses?
I mean it about the gunmen.
You mean the poachers. And don't worry. Dr. Crane called the authorities to let them know about the elephant.
How do we know they're poachers? Did you get a good look at any of them? What if they weren't poachers at all? What if it was that idiot Porter again?
Damn it. Lenny's right. How do I know it was poachers? There's circumstantial evidence to suggest that's the case, but that's all it is. Circumstantial. And Porter has tried twice before to take his father's drawing and notes from me. Fine. I'll be careful. And I'll make sure that Porter can't follow me, if indeed he is out there watching us.
Lenny must have seen the change in her expression.
What are you gonna do?
Just what we planned to do. Find out what happened to Humphrey.
Anya.
Don't worry. I've got a plan.
Shortly before dawn the next morning, Anya's Nissan drove through the gate of Crane's compound, heading north. If by chance she was being tracked by Porter or any hired guns who might be working for him, they were due for an unpleasant surprise when they eventually discovered that it was Henry behind the wheel and not her. Switching vehicles had been his idea. Anya wasn't convinced it was entirely necessary, but in the end she'd agreed to do it simply to get Henry and Lenny to stop nagging her. Anya was convinced that the bullet that struck Lenny earlier had been fired from a poacher's rifle. The two men were not. If Porter was still on their trail, it wouldn't hurt to use sleight of hand to throw him off, they had reasoned. Anya's counterargument that they'd be putting Henry in danger had been brushed aside.
Porter won't harm me. I'm tied too tightly to the local community for him to risk it. Trust me.
In the end, Anya had decided to do just that. The Nissan had been driven inside the long, barn-like structure that served as the compound's garage, and there it had been stripped of all the gear Anya and Lenny had brought with them. The truck was returned to its parking spot outside, while the gear itself had been transferred to Henry's minibus. The way the procedure was handled by Henry's men suggested they'd done something similar more than once before. Anya knew Henry had been active in trying to help the local people reclaim their ancestral land when the Botswanan government had forced them out of the Kalahari Reserve a few years back, and she found herself wondering just what it was his people had been smuggling into the interior. Food and water, perhaps? Maybe medicine? She knew it couldn't have been weapons. The San tribesmen, not to mention Henry himself, weren't prone to violence. Anya waited 15 minutes after Henry left the compound, giving him time to draw off anyone who might be watching for her departure, before starting the aged Toyota minibus that he had swapped for her SUV. She left the headlights off, using the lights from the nearby buildings to help her navigate as she drove slowly through the compound, headed for the opposite gate facing south. A man stood by the gate, waiting for her. When she was close enough, he pushed it open and waited for her to drive through before pulling it shut and securing it behind her. Now she was on her own. The Toyota had seen more than its fair share of use. It didn't handle as well as the Nissan she'd left behind, but it should be up to the task before her.
I hope.
Anya drove slowly away from the compound a good distance before turning on the headlights and heading out into the African night. For the first time in days, Anya felt she was right where she was supposed to be. The road wasn't much more than a dirt track, but the minibus took it without complaint. According to Crane, she was to follow this road due south for about 80 miles. From there, she would turn west and make her way deeper into the Kalahari until she reached the White Valley, The villagers she was looking for never stayed in one place long, so at that point she would have to hunt them down by trial and error. The directions weren't detailed, but they were good enough. She'd find the village, she had little doubt of that. The hard part, she suspected, would be convincing the tribe to help her in her quest to discover what had happened to Humphrey during that final, fateful expedition. Especially if realizing her quest meant finding the lost city, and it turned out the San people couldn't, or wouldn't, help her.
Let's just hope they're in a sharing mood.
The first part of the trip passed without incident. Twice she was forced to wait while large groups of wildebeests crossed the road. Later, she caught a glimpse of a lioness dragging a zebra carcass behind her and disappearing into the brush along the side of the trail. The latter nearly proved to be Anya's downfall. While she was craning her head, trying to get another look at the magnificent creature, she inadvertently swerved off the side of the road. She took the bus crashing through a series of camel thorn bushes, bumping over several newly formed termite mounds, before regaining control and getting back on track. After that, she did her best to keep her eyes on the road. The sun came up, and Anya began to see more and more wildlife as she went deeper into the reserve. By mid-morning, the temperature had risen to somewhere in the low 90s, and Anya was grateful for the minibus's noisy air conditioning. She even left the vehicle running when she stopped to forage for something to eat in her backpack, not wanting to forfeit the steady stream of cool air coming out of the vents by turning the ignition off. Two cans of peaches and a bottle of water later, Anya was ready to continue. At the 80-mile mark, Anya turned off the dirt track and headed west, just as she'd been instructed. If her rate of travel on the so-called road had been slow, it was positively glacial as she drove carefully through the knee-high scrub grass, on the lookout for hidden obstacles. An hour after turning off, she glanced down at the odometer and saw that she'd only traveled another 5 miles. Drumming the wheel impatiently, she continued onward. She hadn't gone much farther when noises began issuing from beneath the hood of the minibus. Anya wasn't a mechanical whiz by any stretch of the imagination, but even she knew that wasn't a good sign. A glance at the dashboard showed the minibus's temperature gauge way up in the red. Concerned, she slowed the vehicle and came to a stop. By then, however, the damage was done. Steam billowed out along the edges of the bus's hood, evidence that it had overheated. Anya wouldn't be going anywhere until the vehicle cooled. But as she stepped out of the minibus and glanced back along the dirt track she'd been following for the past several hours, she noticed the real problem. A thin black line stretched back the way she had come, glistening in the late morning light. Anya squatted down beside it. She reached out and dipped a finger in the substance, then brought it up to her face for a closer look. Oil.
Damn.
Anya hurried over to take a look beneath the vehicle at a point just behind the front tire. All it took was one glance to confirm her fears. Oil was slowly dripping from a hole she'd somehow managed to tear through the bottom of the oil pan. That meant the knocking she'd heard must have been the pistons firing without any oil in the engine. She was carrying an extra pint or two of oil, but it wasn't enough to fill the oil pan, even if she could get the hole plugged up.
Damn it!
Anya kicked the tire in frustration.
If Crane's directions are right, the White Valley is at least another 8 to 10 miles ahead of me. Not to mention whatever distance I'd need to cover to find the San village once I get there. I can do 3 miles an hour on foot, which means it's going to take me until mid-afternoon to reach the valley. What other choice do I have? This is the middle of the Kalahari. Certainly no sense in staying here.
Once she made up her mind to continue on foot, Anya set to making preparations with her usual level of focus and attention. She filled her backpack with several days' worth of MREs that she'd bought back in Maun, and as much water as she could carry. She added a flashlight, batteries, matches, water purification tablets, and a few more odds and ends she thought she might need. She kept a careful watch on how heavy the pack got. She didn't want to overburden herself and wind up exhausted before she'd reached the valley. At the same time, she didn't want to end up in the middle of the Kalahari with nothing to drink. When she was ready, Anya slung the pack onto her back, tugged her Yankees baseball cap squarely down on her head, and set off westward into one of the last great wildernesses on the planet. Anya could feel her heart pounding with excitement. The terrain, mostly flat plains and knee-high grasses, was easy to navigate, and Anya was able to keep a steady pace without much difficulty, which was a good thing because she didn't want to stay out here any longer than necessary. The sun beat down mercilessly from high overhead, and she was soon thankful for both her baseball cap and her long-sleeve shirt, despite the 100-plus degree temperature. Without them, she would have roasted alive. As it was, she was able to keep her body temperature down to a reasonable level by periodically soaking her shirt with some of the precious water she was carrying. She saw more wildlife now that she was on foot than she had driving. It was as if the animals had decided to put on a display for her and her alone. Giraffes, wildebeests, warthogs, gemsbok, and jackals. The number and variety of the animals she cautiously passed were astounding. Above her head soared goshawks and kites, kestrels and martial eagles. Twice she passed massive weaver nests suspended in the branches of low-hanging trees, the colonies stretching nearly 15 feet in length and inhabited by more than 100 of the yellow-breasted birds. Anya felt like a little girl on her first trip to the zoo, and every new sighting brought a wide smile to her face and an eagerness to see more. For a while, she stopped worrying about finding the San village she was headed toward and just basked in the beauty that nature laid out for her to enjoy. Eventually, though, her thoughts returned to the warning Lenny had given her that the poachers might not have been poachers. When she'd been safely behind the wheel of Crane's old minibus, putting distance between herself and the compound as rapidly as possible, she hadn't been concerned.
By the time Porter figures out where I've gone, if it is Porter, and even if he does figure out where I've gone, my lead will be so large I doubt he would be able to catch up with me.
Now, however, stuck crossing the Kalahari on foot, she wasn't feeling so confident.
If Lenny was right, Porter is far more dangerous than I thought. Not that I can't handle him if necessary. Better men than Porter have tried to eliminate me. If Porter pushes things beyond the pale, I'll deal with him.
Anya banished Porter from her thoughts and turned her attention back to the task at hand. As far as she could tell, she'd been traveling at a steady pace of about 3 miles per hour, just as she'd anticipated back at the beginning of her hike. Given that she'd been walking for almost 3 hours now, she should be reaching the White Valley soon. At that point, it was just a matter of locating the San village, which she didn't expect to be difficult. As it turned out, she was right. Anya was taking advantage of the cooler air in the shadow of a large boulder to squat for a moment and take a few sips from her water bottle when she felt eyes upon her. She gave no indication that she sensed a presence and just continued letting the cool liquid slide down her throat. She didn't see anything at first and was starting to wonder if it had just been a momentary interest from a passing animal when she finally spotted what she was looking for. A pair of brown eyes, set in a dark face, stared out at her from behind a nearby bush. She let her gaze slide over him, not wanting to give away that she'd seen him yet, in the hopes of observing him in turn for a moment or two.
I have to give him credit. The boy is good. If I hadn't stopped to take a drink, I probably would never have noticed that I was being followed.
As it was, Anya could barely make out his form, hidden by the vegetation he was crouched behind. But she had a hunch she knew how to draw him out. Anya dug into her backpack and removed a couple of the chocolate-flavored protein bars she carried. Unwrapping one of them, she made a big show of taking and enjoying a bite of it.
That's good.
Then she took another. She kept it up until she'd finished the entire bar. Then, unwrapping the second one, she held it out toward the bush where the boy was hiding.
Here. You try some.
He didn't move.
Come on, I won't bite.
Anya smiled at him, doing her best to appear non-threatening. Given the number of safaris that operated in this part of the world, Anya was betting the boy had encountered strangers before, and it turned out she was right. He slowly stuck his head out from behind the bush and watched her for a moment. Then, having apparently decided she wasn't a major threat to life, limb, or liberty, he walked over and squatted in front of her. Anya held the protein bar out to him.
Go on, take a bite.
She didn't think he could understand her, at least not verbally, but that didn't stop him from taking the bar from her hand and sniffing at it.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with you, kid.
The boy appeared startled for a moment. From the bushes came more laughter, and before Anya knew it, she was surrounded by children of different ages. They all reached for the protein bar to try it for themselves. Anya even dug out two more so that there would be enough to go around. When they were finished with the protein bars, they took her hands, drew her up from the ground, and led her into the bush. The children led her right into the village. A couple dozen grass and wood huts had been erected in a clearing, the doors all facing inward toward the communal cooking and eating area in the center. There were perhaps 50 or so people here. The men and women alike dressed in simple, loose clothing made of animal skins, many with their upper torsos bare. Their skin was dark, with a leathery appearance from all the time they'd spent in the sun, making it hard for her to guess their ages. The women were all hard at work on one task or another. She spotted one group making jewelry from what looked to be ostrich eggs, while another group a short distance away was butchering a pair of Gemsbok antelope, no doubt for dinner that evening. The men squatted in a group on the other side of the camp, talking among themselves. They glanced at Anya as she and the children passed, but kept at their activities and made no move to interact with her. Anya knew the San were a nomadic people, setting up camp in an area for an indeterminate period and then moving on again when food or water became scarce. At least, that's what her anthropology class had taught her. Something about this village spoke of a greater permanence, however. The huts seemed to be built of sturdy materials and didn't appear to be the type of structure that could be taken down with any ease or speed. Another detail that caught her attention was the high percentage of implements, tools, and other items made from bone. Anya knew that the San believed in using every available part of the game they killed, so she expected some items to have been crafted from bone. But there seemed to be a disproportionate volume of bones here, as if these people had access to a larger supply than usual. The children led her toward a young man sitting beneath a monkey thorn tree, talking to several other children. He looked to be roughly her age, and what little he wore showed off his powerful physique. As Anya and the children approached, he rose to his feet and smiled warmly.
Welcome to our village.
Thank you. I'm Anya.
My name is Tolo. Where is the rest of your group? Are you here on a tour?
No, I'm on my own.
It is not safe to be in Kalahari alone. There are many predators.
You've got that right. And not just the four-legged kind either.
Anya slipped her pack off her back and pulled a photograph of Humphrey out of one of its pockets. She held it up to Tolo.
I'm looking for this man. Can you tell me if you've seen him?
For just a moment, she thought she saw a flicker of recognition in his eyes, but it was gone so quickly that she wasn't sure it had been there at all. He shook his head.
I do not know this man.
Perhaps there is someone else who might have seen him?
I will take you to Umege, our village elder.
Your English is excellent. Where did you learn it?
I went to school for a little while when the government took our land. I learned quickly.
Anya knew about the land dispute from her research. When diamonds had been discovered inside the reserve, the Botswana government forcibly relocated most of the San tribesmen to refugee camps outside its boundaries. They were prevented from hunting and gathering and forced to live on government handouts. A number of human rights organizations came to the aid of the San, and a few years ago the tribe had won the right to return to their ancestral home and way of life. Now, several years later, many still lingered in the camps, victims of alcoholism, boredom, and depression. Tolo led her through the village to where a group of older San were gathered together in the shade of several trees. One of them rose to his feet. He was a wizened fellow with bright eyes that seemed to stare into her. A mischievous grin played at the corners of his mouth. They went back and forth for a moment, question and reply, until Tolo turned to Anya.
This is Mamege, our elder. I've told him you are looking for help. Ask him what you wish, and I will translate for you.
Anya nodded, then turned to face the old man, holding up the picture of Humphrey again.
I'm looking for this man. Can you tell me if you've seen him?
The
elder stared at the photo in Anya's hand for a moment, and then shook his head.
Mamege says that he does not know that man.
Anya frowned. Something didn't feel right to her. The elder's answer had been straightforward enough, provided it was translated properly, but something still felt off. Even though she couldn't speak the language, she was left with the sense that the elder was lying.
Why would he do that?
Anya handed the photograph to Tolo and indicated that he should give it to Mamege.
It's been some time, so perhaps a closer look might help? His name is Robert Humphrey. Big happy fellow with a keen interest in you and your culture. I'm all but positive he came this way. If he did, I find it hard to imagine that he wouldn't have stopped to enjoy your hospitality.
Tolo held out the photo, but Mamege didn't even look at it.
Akuna.
Anya could hear the finality of that one word. He turned away, a sure sign that the audience was over. And that's when Anya saw it. Tattooed on the old man's back was the image of an elephant skull, complete with long, curving tusks. It started near the base of his spine and rose upward, with tusks pointing over each shoulder and filled nearly his entire back.
He was searching for the elephant graveyard and thought you knew where it could be found.
Alikuwa kwa ajili ya kutafuta makaburini tembo.
Mamege stared at her with hard eyes, his mouth stretched into a tight, angry line. Even Tolo was shaking his head in barely restrained anger. Anya opened her mouth, intending to apologize, but the elder was a beat quicker.
You go!
6 San warriors rose to their feet, spears and bows in hand. Anya looked at each of them, one after the other, letting them see she wasn't intimidated by their actions. At the same time, however, she recognized that she needed their help. Antagonizing them wasn't a smart way to go about getting it. She faced Mamege once again and bowed slightly to show her acceptance of his request.
I'm sorry to have offended you.
Anasime yeye nipole, ana mashaka wewe.
With that, Anya let them lead her out of the village.